And before you leave, we have you to sign in on that.
Oh, I totally forgot to sign in. Sorry.
Put this on silent.
So is it all right if I record you?
Yes.
Okay. Do you mind stating your name?
My name is Katie Frances Wilson.
Okay. So thank you so much for agreeing to participate in this project. It will surely benefit the community now and in the future. The goal of this questionnaire is to produce as detailed and coherent a narrative of your story as possible. In light of that, I encourage you to feel free to not worry about providing an answer that is too long or too in-depth. Okay.
Okay.
So in what year were you born?
1946.
Okay. And where were you born?
Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And it was called the Rutherford County Hospital, which is now Middle Tennessee Medical Center.
And how do you define yourself in terms of racial and ethnic identity?
African American.
Okay. And what is the last level of schooling that you completed?
I completed a bachelor's degree from Middle Tennessee State University.
Okay. And are you married or have you ever been married?
Never been married.
So tell me about, I guess, like, your childhood, sort of, just in broad terms, like, growing up, like, was it more, were you more in the city or suburbs, country?
I'm going to let it go.
Yes,
yeah.
It's okay.
I live what we consider the country.
Mm-hmm.
Where we live was the Murfreesboro Golf and Country Club. My father trained show horses that is taken to the walking celebration every year, walking horse celebration. I'm from a family of 8 children, and I'm the last of the 8. So basically, it was a large gathering.
Mm-hmm.
Our house was across the opening area from the barn.
Mm-hmm.
The lady that owned the property, the Murfreesboro Golf and Country Club, they had the 2-story white house that you enter from the road.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you were a block coming up the road. And then we had the showground where we trained the horses that was on the front side, that the golf course surrounded the whole property in which we live. Where I was young, we had all kinds of animals. We had the rabbits. It was about 40 at one time. Of course, they kept having more babies.
Yeah.
We had the chickens, in which the fox always wanted to beat us to the eggs before we could get to the hen house, so we had to run them out in the morning. We had peacocks that when you have that spread, they lose the feathers.
Mm-hmm.
We could sell that to some people that would like to have arts.
Mm-hmm.
We had guineas. Those were those little...
Little birds,
mm-hmm. were all, but they stayed on the ground. They never flew. But the guineas always run around.
Mm-hmm.
We use them as part of our pet exhibits because every year during the Mid-State Color Fair, we could exhibit some of the little projects.
Mm-hmm.
And we had hogs. We had pigs.
Mm-hmm.
We always took them to the show.
Yeah.
They had a time. Once the hogs got big, we sold them to the slaughterhouse in Nashville. We had to take care of them. We also had cows that we had to milk every morning before we turn them out to pasture. And so after everybody else grew up, and I was basically the last one did a lot of the outdoor chores, I had to milk the cow, even though that cow may have a calf. So we had to share the tits. So as we milking, so we make sure the bucket of milk did not turn over. And I was telling somebody the other day, we just prayed that it was no wild onions out there when we turn them out to graze and we bring them back in at night.
Why?
Because the milk had the wild onion taste.
Oh, weird.
And we didn't buy milk. Uh-huh. We used the milk from the cows and just cool it. And that was our milk for our cereals. Everything that we cooked with, cornbread.
Yeah.
It was some good milk, but it didn't taste too good when wild onion had the taste in your milk.
Yeah.
We had goats because around Thanksgiving, the whole community would come out and they would go hunting. Mm-hmm. They would hunt rabbits, whatever they could hunt, and they would bring them back. They had a time where they killed the hogs, and preserve the ham. Mm-hmm. They use the intestines as the chitlins, mm-hmm. which is great eating. A lot of folks didn't like the hog intestine. The women would come out to clean, mm-hmm. and then we'd bring it in the house to cook, because what the women did, the wives and yeah. the mothers, the kids came too, but most of the wives and mothers, mm-hmm. they did the canning.
Uh-huh.
Because we also had fruit trees, which was peaches and apples, in between the country club and the big yeah. house, that we could go pears,
yeah.
and they did a lot of preserving. Blackberries. We'll go out and pick blackberries,
mm-hmm.
and it'll be a part of the what we call the blackberry pie,
mm.
Cobblers and things like that.
Yeah.
So it was fun time. So.
Do you want to pause it?
Yeah. Go for it. So, okay, so how many, so was your the only family that lived on the country club, or were there others?
No, we were the only American family that lived near the Bourne, because my father was mm-hmm. a horse trainer.
Right, okay.
We also had another tenant family that lived between the country club and the lady home that they owned, which was a white family.
Okay.
And had children too.
Okay.
And I remember that father worked at a service station.
Okay.
And I forgot what the mother did, but mostly she was at home.
Mm-hmm.
I guess mostly a housewife.
Yeah.
But we all was on the same property.
And would you play with those kids too?
Yes. And we fought with those kids as well.
Yeah.
But we all went to segregated schools.
Right, right.
Yeah. Where most of us went to the school in Christiana, Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
which was about, I guess, 5 to 10 miles south, going towards Shelbyville,
mm-hmm.
down 231. And where we was located, we were considered 3 miles outside of the city limits.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, we were going to county schools.
Right.
Until most of my sisters and brothers had went to high school. And then it was only 2 of us left that mm-hmm. was going to be at that elementary school. So what my mother suggested for us to go to the city elementary schools. And so we went to Bradley Elementary on okay. Mercury Boulevard
yeah.
when we was in the 7th and 8th grade.
Okay.
And so that was going to leave me once my sister went to high school the next year. So it was too many students when I got to the 8th grade that was going to attend the school. So mm-hmm. what they did is separate the 7th and 8th grade and made a middle school. So we came to Old Bradley, which is this location
okay.
on South Academy Street for my 8th grade year.
Oh, funny.
And then high school, we all went to Holloway High School.
Yeah. So, when you would play with the other, the white kids or whatever mm-hmm. that lived on the property, like, what did you think about the fact that you went to different schools? Like, did that, at the time, did you think about it? Or
no, we didn't think about it because it really didn't make any difference
mm-hmm.
because we grew up at a time when you had the signs that said color only and white only. Mm-hmm. Even when you came downtown on Saturday, around the courthouse, the water fountains, it says you couldn't drink out of this one because you had to go over here and it said color only.
Mm-hmm.
Then when we went to the movies at the Princess Theater,
yeah.
We had to buy tickets and then go around the corner and go up the steps to the balcony.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun for us.
Yeah.
And so when integration occurred, integration really came in after I left high school.
Right.
But really they closed the high school in 68 and says they forced integration. But some students had already started years early going mm-hmm. to the white high school. But what they had done is it just say, to not cause friction. And my mother and father was always working in other people's houses, either like department stores where had purchased horses, and they would bring the horses out there to be housed where my father would be the trainer.
Mm-hmm.
So we never, they never treated us differently, but we knew that our parents worked for other people. Right. They didn't have their own business.
Right.
And my mother was a caterer, so she really catered for a lot of different businesses, as well as the president of the university here, a lot of the physicians, the women's club, which is a building downtown on College Street, mm-hmm. where a lot of the women, they had children, and they did a lot of cooking for other people. They came together to cook the dinner at the women's club for the business women that came through there. So basically, that's how we met a lot of the other people in the community. But I guess back then, we were happy with what we were doing, because where we lived, we usually have the buses to come out, and we have fish fry. Mm-hmm. If people spent the night, back then, you didn't worry about locking your doors. Mm-hmm. It was so nice. We didn't even have fans. We always lift the windows and get your air cooled down by then.
Yeah.
I'll take your blanket. We would sleep outside.
Yeah.
Sometimes we'll go out and sleep on the green. We just knew before daylight you were going to get your things off that green.
Yeah.
Because they had the people coming out getting the greens prepared, yeah, for the golfers. So we just had a fun time. No incident, in my opinion. I mean, yeah, we fought about different things, but, you know, the kids were called names, but, you know, we got over it. We were best friends when we became adults.
Mm-hmm.
We always looked each other up, even though we moved out of the county.
Yeah. So, so when did you move?
In 65, my parents, when I went away to college.
Okay.
In 64, during my freshman year in college, I found out when I got ready to come home, I did not come home to the Murfreesboro Golf and Country Club. My parents had left there because they were getting ready to sell a lot of that property, mm-hmm, to the golf course.
Okay.
So basically, what I did is, it was different because we moved to a place that it was only a house and a little bit of land. You make it have a little garden back there. You had a little shed where you put your storage that didn't, mm-hmm, fit into the house, because it's like we went from a 6-room house to a 4-room house.
Yeah.
And it was different because I was the only child. Well, might have been me and my sister. No, my sister got married and she was moving away.
Okay.
So basically, I was the only child left at home.
Yeah, at that point. So what were your dreams for the future when you were a kid or a teenager?
I wanted to be a professional basketball player.
Oh.
Yes, yes. But they didn't even have a women's basketball team at the college level when I was there. We just played intramural sports.
Yeah.
But they did have a professional team in Nashville,
mm-hmm,
which was a business college. And I really didn't want to get into business,
mm-hmm,
because my major was mathematics and physical education was my minor with chemistry. And I just didn't feel like I just want to go to a business college.
Right, yeah.
I wanted the full range of what a college experience would like.
Right.
And my teachers in high school used to say, you just need to live in a dorm, just even if it's just for 1 year or one semester, just to get the experience of being around other,
yeah,
kids from different states. And so that was my high point, is making sure I was eligible to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
it came. They started having women teams in the 70s.
After the time. What about your? What did your parents? What was their dream for you when you were growing up? What do they want?
Make sure I had a job. Make sure I had a job. My father always wanted me to get married, and
mm-hmm,
I think he felt that I probably would move away. And he used to try to introduce me to some of his friends that was horse trainers that,
mm-hmm,
had kids. And I just kind of grinned, thank you, and just went on.
Uh-huh.
But otherwise, I just wanted to make sure that you were employed, you were happy, and whatever you were doing, But mostly of all, they just wanted their children to get more education than they got.
Mm-hmm.
My father completed the 8th grade. He did not have the college, high school experience.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was in high school, but never got a chance to finish.
Mm-hmm.
But she did, she said she substituted the younger grades when she was a high school student.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about, what kind of, you talked a little bit about some like games you played as a kid, but what, I guess like, yeah, what kind of stuff did you do like for fun socially as like as a child and then as a teenager?
As a teenager, oh my goodness, I guess basketball was big for us, because
mm-hmm.
my freshman year, my brother used to tell me, I was the first freshman that would come in and take seniors out of their starting position. And that was news to me. And
yeah.
He used to say, well, you put a lot of work into it. And
yeah.
It was just, even when school was out, you play outdoor sports. And it was always basketball. I played softball.
Mm-hmm.
We had different softball teams. And after integration, we joined teams that was integrated. And that was a great opportunity because we got to travel outside of the city a lot instead of just playing across town.
Right.
With the opportunity to be a part of the, when I was a student, to be a part of the swimming team. Well, we really didn't have a team, but when you went to PE, you had a chance as being the only girl and you had to swim because during the summer, I took the Red Cross swimming.
Oh, cool.
Yes. That I didn't know how good a hip that was going to be, but I knew going to college, it was going to be required that you take swimming. So what I tried to do, I think it was my freshman year, is to go ahead and take the Red Cross swimming test and do it again. Each year that they had it set up for the summer, so I can do the advanced instead of the beginners, and just learn others. So we did a lot of trick swims, a dive from the side. The one I liked the most was the change because I got to be the person that dived off, mm-hmm. and everybody else, you hook your ankles, you always hold onto a person's ankle, so it'll snatch you off the side of the.
Oh wow!
Yeah, you be.
Oh, like
squat,
it'd
be like dominoes.
Right.
The lead person is have the deeper dive.
Yeah.
And you could go fast or slow, depending on how they come off. It's just like a train turning over.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because they would be in a squat move, and they would be holding your ankles. So when your feet go off, it snatch you the next person off.
Yeah.
And then they get a chance to dive.
Hmm.
So that was fun. I said, what else? We played, we had, every Wednesday night was fun night in the park.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody from all around, it was free night, free movie night.
Oh.
Yes.
They put that to Monica.
Yes, the big screen.
Uh-huh.
Everybody came in cars from everywhere. They sold popcorn, drinks,
mm-hmm.
but you got to meet all your friends because, see, you come from the country and come into the city.
Mm-hmm.
And so you knew that was a good opportunity to meet your friends that you hadn't seen all week from other schools, so you get to see. And also during the summertime, we had what we call the Mid-State Color Fair,
mm-hmm.
where all the carnival would come to town. And where Patterson Park is then,
mm-hmm.
all of that used to be the fairground.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And where the pavilion is, that used to be the football field.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we have the horse shows. And only the trainers for the owners could show the show horses,
mm-hmm.
the walking horse. Only the trainers, because
dad,
this was the African-American Mid-State Color Fair. This was only for the trainers.
Huh.
They could bring the horses in and exhibit them before the Walking Horse Celebration occurred, but it was always in the summertime. Cool. And that was always great when I was young. We have pictures when I was probably 8th grader.
Uh-huh.
It might have been a 7th grader, because my family won the largest family in attendance.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How many?
Because, I'm trying to think. All 8 of us, my mother and father's 10, the grandchildren made 12.
12?
It's 12. And my sister was one of the ones that gave the ribbon away because she was Miss Holloway when
oh,
she
really?
Graduated in 56.
Oh, funny.
So it had to be before 56.
Uh-huh.
Before, oh gosh. I might have been a 6th grader when that picture was taken.
Cool kid.
So I have the picture here in the museum.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
Oh, well, we'll let you see the picture, the whole family structure, because I found out later, I was always wondering how come I was always around my sisters, because my mother always worked outside mm-hmm. of the house. But the older girls were supposed to choose one of the younger girls
mm-hmm.
To take care of just 2 younger girls. And then the younger brothers was in between the older 3 girls. And then it was 3 boys and then the 2 girls at yeah. the end. So,
sweet. How many siblings do you have? Wait.
I had 7.
Oh, right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I had 7. It was 5 girls and 3 boys total.
Yeah, and you're the baby.
Yeah, the youngest.
the youngest. Who are some of your best friends growing up?
My best friends growing up, I guess in elementary school, and we're still friends today, is Jo Mac Fletcher. There was one always said he was the one that really pushed me when we was younger to make sure we made the A's. We always made the grades.
Mm-hmm.
We were always the one that, I guess, got involved with a lot of activities that the school provided.
Mm-hmm.
When I left that school, and I guess I didn't pick up my best friends again until I got to high school my freshman mm-hmm. year. And so we're still friends today. We found out when we was in high school, we had 15 items that we could list that we had in common.
Oh, I know who this is. Okay, sorry.
So when I had an opportunity to adopt my cousin, and he was born in Florida,
mm-hmm.
She went with me, plus seemed like half of the community, and some of the people that I worked with when I went to the state job to work, everybody wanted to travel and pick him up.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a chance to adopt a child in 1983.
Mm-hmm.
He was 3 months old when mm-hmm. we brought him. But just what happened, he's named after my best friend, youngest child.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just about had the same initials.
Hmm.
So we was adding on to that 15 that we had when we was in high school. So we did a lot of things together.
Mm-hmm.
Our families were real close and still considered close. We always call them brother, sister.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm in the neighborhood. They always call me auntie,
mm-hmm.
even though I'm not really the community, kids, auntie, but
right.
everybody that I have worked with in the past,
yeah.
a lot of the kids call me aunt.
What's your son's name?
Craig.
Craig.
Mm-hmm.
And so you said you got he was your was
first
your cousin?
Cousin's.
He's your first cousin.
Son.
Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. She was going to give him
up
for adoption,
mm-hmm.
and so we said, oh. I was working midnight shift, had another job during the day, so they called me where I was working at midnight shift and said, oh, we noticed that you don't have a child, and we just suggested that this would be a great time for you to start your family. I said, oh, And how did you figure that? And they said, well, you always said you had did a program at MTSU. Mm-hmm. And one of my programs that I left as a teaching film is single parent open adoption. Mm-hmm. That was my topic.
Okay.
And so 4 years later, he was born.
Yeah.
And so they said, well, you can make arrangements. And I said, oh, okay. So we said, well, he will always know who his biological parents were.
Mm-hmm.
And so that has worked well for him.
Does he still talk to his biological?
Oh, yes. His mother just left us about 2 days ago,
mm-hmm.
going back home.
Okay. So you're friendly with her, too?
Oh, raised her.
Okay.
She never... What happened was, my first cousin, which was my father's children,
mm-hmm.
He died when they was very small. My son's mother was one when her father passed.
Mm-hmm.
And 4 years later, before she turned five, her mother died.
Oh, wow.
So basically, she did not know her mother nor her father.
Mm-hmm.
So what I try to do is keep pictures and information, things, and the grandmother took care of them. So what we agreed with the grandmother, on their mother's deathbed, she wished that whoever took her children would keep all five together.
Mm-hmm.
She had her sisters and brothers, which was nine in their family.
Mm-hmm.
And each one just about wanted one child. They didn't want all five together.
Right, right.
So we made a pact on this side of the family, which was the father's side, because he had already died 4 years early. We said we would keep all five together. The grandmother wanted them to stay in school there in Florida. And when they graduated, they could choose to go whatever college or wherever they wanted to go and live.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we agreed that we would travel, pick them up as soon as school is out in May, and then we will bring them back in August for them to go back to school. So we would bring them to Tennessee for the 3 months to give the grandmother some relief.
Yeah.
And we did that until each one turned 18 to choose where they wanted to go to school.
Huh. That's great.
So I had sisters that we traveled together. Either if the cousins in the north on their mother's side wanted them to come to Detroit, where my other sister and I would drop our nieces in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and then drive to Detroit and drop the five kids off in Detroit, and then 2 weeks later we'll go back and pick them up and bring them back to Tennessee.
Yeah.
And then the next month, in the latter part of August, we would travel to Florida and take them back home and then come back.
Sounds really tight.
Mm-hmm. And so we all are very close.
Mm-hmm.
It was one boy and four girls. And the oldest girl went to college in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. And that's where she lives today. In fact, that's where my son was born, in Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
His biological mother is the youngest of the five. And she lives right outside of Tampa,
mm-hmm.
where my oldest sister was born. It's just weird how it comes back for us, because we used to travel when I was young, before I entered school for the first 3 years of my life. They told me the fall and winter, my mother and father would stay in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
My three oldest sisters would stay with my mother's grandmother that raised her, and my two oldest brothers would stay with my father's sister, where the youngest three would travel with them to Florida. And then in the spring and summer, they would come back to Tennessee, so they did that for about 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
And when we came to Murfreesboro, it was 1943, they just stayed here in Murfreesboro without taking their horses down south, mm-hmm. in the winter.
Okay.
And just work with them here.
Hmm. Going back to thinking about, what was the name of the, so you went to school in Christiana, And then you went to Bradley.
Well, the first school I went to, I really wasn't on the roll. It was a one-room schoolhouse, mm-hmm. and that schoolhouse was called Happy Hill, mm-hmm. and it was just like it said. Everybody was happy because everybody knew each other, but I didn't want to stay at home, and everybody was going to school, and I knew my father trained horses, mm-hmm. but he would have to come to the house and stay with me because my mother worked for some of the people. If she wasn't cleaning the house, she was cooking for them. Mm-hmm. And so that left me, and I would say, well, wake me up when everybody else wake up. And yeah. I used to be in a deep sleep.
Yeah.
And so anyway, what happened was they did wake me up some mornings, and when I did go to school, it was a one-room schoolhouse, had grades 1 through 8, mm-hmm. one teacher. Each row was a grade. And I found out from my sisters later that when she was teaching some of the older children, some of the other grades was teaching the younger kids what they had learned. Okay. So that was real eye-opening to know.
Yeah.
Because I always got in trouble, always wanting to play.
Uh-huh.
And playtime, I was just like being babysit because I was 3, 4. And I wouldn't turn 5 to December of the next year.
Mm-hmm.
So by the next fall, then they moved us, they closed that school and moved us to a 4-room schoolhouse, which also had a kitchen, a complete dining room for the mm-hmm. students, for the cafeteria. So it was 4 teachers, and each one had 2 grades.
Okay.
So that gave us a chance.
To
enjoy that.
And then what was Bradley like?
Now, Bradley Elementary, it had not been built too long.
Mm-hmm.
And it was different because they had upstairs, had classrooms upstairs, mm-hmm. and had classroom downstairs. And it was like every teacher had their own grade. It was different.
Mm-hmm.
So time I got there was the 7th grade. And right. my 7th grade teacher was also the band instructor. We had a chance to change classes because they had library.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a chance to go to the library and to read some of the books.
Mm-hmm.
And also you had physical education,
mm-hmm.
which when I was at Christana, we did not have a gym.
Okay.
Everything was done outdoors.
Right.
And, of course, if it's rain and you could not go outdoors, yeah. you'd just be in the classroom the whole time.
Yeah.
But it was different because everybody was from the city schools
uh-huh.
where there, everybody was from that area, was from that county school. So they had county schools all over. And we only came together every May. We rotate from school to school to have what we call May Day.
Okay.
It was like a field day.
Right, right.
And you just go and have activities. All the buses would come into that one school. And that was having that fundraiser for that school because they had different games set up and then food they would sell. Unless that was your lunch
mm-hmm.
time. And, you know, it was part of lunch. But usually you had parents and everybody show up. I guess to be chaperones, they have out with it, different activities.
So, how did you get to school when you went to Holloway?
Rode the bus.
Okay.
We had a bus, and of course, they had county buses coming from all over. And since I lived on 231, they usually had bus drivers that mm-hmm. owned their buses. And I think we had 2 or 3 different bus drivers I can remember to come that area. But we, of course, be next to the last people they would pick up because we're the ones that's closer to the city right. as they're coming out of the county.
That's nice.
Yes, if you can get a seat.
Well, yeah.
Being closer to the end.
Yeah.
But we always had a seat. We didn't have to worry about standing because they didn't like for you to stand when you're on the bus. Even you had to seat 3 people to a seat.
Yeah. What about, and then with Bradley, how did you get to school?
Same way.
Same bus, right?
Yeah,
same or bus. Different bus.
Yeah. And what they would do, since Bradley was next to Holloway, they would take the high school students, and then we'll get off if we were going over there.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be the last one when I became eighth grader because I couldn't get off if they coming in because I would have to cross the main street
mm-hmm.
to get on this side. So they would drop the high school students off. And as he would head back out of town, he would stop at the corner, and then I would walk from the corner.
Cool. Do you remember favorite subjects from school, things you studied?
Mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a lot of history.
Mm-hmm.
The one I remember the most, because they gave you points, and sometimes they would give you, like, monetary, if you could memorize the states.
Mm-hmm.
And do it alphabetically.
Oh.
if they give you a blank map, could you fill it in?
Oh, right.
Also, a lot of sports, of course. Something different. And you will have to, with home economics, you will have to make a quilt.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to do it piece. You had to do the pieces first
mm-hmm.
before you put the squares together. And then you had to put this, the padding in. But you also had to line it up and make sure all the padding in. And then you had to sew it on the sewing machine. So you learn how to use the sewing machine.
That's helpful.
Yeah, because you had to make sure you stitch everything down. And then they had you stitch some crosses on there to hold the padding mm-hmm. in for that block that you just put on there.
Right.
So it was different. It was something to learn.
Yeah.
Then you had to make dresses.
Huh.
So that was different. You had to learn how to use a typewriter.
Uh-huh.
And back then, it wasn't electric.
Yeah.
It was like Ely and Packer. I think Packer was the two.
Mm-hmm.
Where they use the little balls that you set in there to make the different design.
It's like...
Yes. Like, I still have it.
Oh.
I have one.
I'm jealous.
I bring it out when we have our Heritage Festival.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was nice. Chemistry was different. I think it was high school is when we changed classes. So... Mm-hmm. That was a great opportunity, but in chemistry, you learn the different labs and make sure you don't put water with acid, so
mm-hmm.
you learn all of those things early. Then you had to learn the metals, the mm-hmm. signs, because they always had a big chart and see if you could remember when it was test time.
Mm-hmm.
So when it got to the chemistry class, according to your grade, that's how they seated your role.
Really?
So it was always a favorite little four of us. We made sure we started together. It was two guys and two girls.
Mm-hmm.
And we always had the back row because we were the A students. And that was different. She said, well, I'm going to move y'all because y'all talking. But we made sure when we got to class, we did not talk in her class.
Yeah.
Talk before the bell rang.
Yeah, yeah.
So... those were the little games they used to play. The same thing was in history.
Mm-hmm.
They would compete between the senior class and the junior class. And they had a little game going. Tell me how many students are recognized for their creativity, their athletic ability,
mm-hmm.
Their academic, and see how many juniors outdid the seniors,
mm-hmm.
and then they always have something special for those people that had more of the grades. So it was different in high school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was there any tensions or rivalries between kids at school, like different cliques, or most people?
They always call us the country kids.
Hmm?
But we accepted it.
You were like, that's true.
Because we knew what we we figured that we had some talent.
Yeah.
We could hold our own.
Yeah.
And so we just continued to do our little things, and they always, but I could flow between them because, see, I went to the city school and I went to the county school, so mm-hmm. they couldn't just put me in one or the other.
Right.
And then I played sports. Mm-hmm. So basketball was big back then,
mm-hmm.
and that's where I won Miss Valentine, because only the athletes could run for the queen, be the Valentine queen. So the votes came from most of the guys. So I was friendly with everybody.
Yeah.
And I found out later that's how my sister got all her votes to be the queen of the school.
Oh,
yeah.
So yeah, what's Miss Valentine? What is that?
Valentine Day.
They were there. So you're like...
Yeah.
So you get your...
But they only could present it during the basketball game. So okay. That's the reason they said it only could be basketball players to run for it. So I got the votes from the guys at school.
Uh-huh.
I got more votes because I was a senior.
Did you go to prom?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. We did.
Dances and stuff like that. Were you into that?
Yes. And then we also had, we had a sports banquet where they give all the awards mm-hmm. for all the different sports. So all the girls and the boys always came together.
Yeah.
But only the ones could attend was those athletes and their guests.
Right, right.
Yes. It wasn't just open to anybody mm-hmm. to come, because otherwise you wouldn't be able to get anybody in the gyms, and they had the dinner tables and everything set up in the gym.
Yeah.
Gym.
What about, what kind of a discipline was used, like in high school? The teachers
you
used.
You made sure you followed the teacher rule mm-hmm. because my father and my mother was very strict about being disrespectful to adults.
Mm-hmm.
That was something you didn't do. They did not allow you to, as you say, have a written note to the parent mm-hmm. and say, you need to visit.
Yeah,
I learned that from my older sisters,
mm-hmm.
where they may have pulled those tricks, but I knew I wanted to play basketball, so I didn't pull those tricks.
Yeah.
And see, I knew that just about every teacher knew my parents, because my mother did a lot of catering of the dinners that they would have at school.
Okay. Well, what kind of punishment?
The parties.
Like, what did your parents use for punish, for, like, to discipline, if they needed to? If not you, your siblings.
Switches from the trees.
Okay.
And not to mention, my father was a horse trainer, so he had a horse strap.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you learn in early years that that's something you did not want. So you knew... My father was the type, he could raise a finger, and you know what that finger meant. He could look at you, and that means you had to sit up and be quiet.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't be talking, not even in church, because church was definitely a no-no.
Yeah.
You did not cause any disturbance in church.
What church did you attend?
I went to Allen Chapel AME Church in Nestor Springs, Tennessee.
Okay. What denomination is that?
AME was Adventist Methodist.
Okay.
Episcopal.
Okay.
It's a Methodist.
Methodist.
Right.
Not well versed.
That's all right.
And did you go regular, like every Sunday? It was pretty regular.
No. That church, we only met twice the Sunday of the month. The other Sundays, we went to the Baptist churches here in Murfreesboro,
okay.
which was Cherry Grove Missionary Baptist mm-hmm. Church, which sits in the county.
Mm-hmm.
We also sung in their choir.
Okay.
We also travel a lot with them. We had all denominations to come together and to make the Murfreesboro Mass Symposium,
mm-hmm.
which was a choir members from different churches. They came together and made a mass choir for Murfreesboro. Mm-hmm. We had an opportunity to do that. So basically on the Sundays that we didn't go to our church, when we were younger, we went to visit my grandparents on my father's side. Because basically the church that we were a member of was my grandmother, was my mother's grandmother's church.
Okay.
And so that's the church we all became members of.
Okay. And what about nowadays? Do you still attend church?
Church? That church in Nessa Springs burnt in 1984.
Oh, wow.
So it took us a whole year. We researched, we visited for a year before we made a decision.
Mm-hmm.
The state, part of the AME Church, mm-hmm. the whole state is broke up in three major conferences.
Mm-hmm.
And then the district is part of the state of Kentucky and the state of Tennessee make up one district, which is District 13. And we wanted, since we're part of the Chattanooga district,
mm-hmm.
we wanted a church that was still a part of that conference. So we joined in 1985, Barry Chapel AME Church in Lynchburg, Tennessee. Okay. I tell them I get the spirit before I get the church because I'm three blocks from Jack Daniel, this area. And it's open 7 days a week.
Yeah.
But I just enjoy the little country town.
Yeah.
Small membership. We got less than 200 on the road.
Is that a long commute?
About just 40 minutes.
Okay, that's not bad.
No, it's not bad at all. It used to be an hour and a half. Because we had to go through Tullahoma and then mm-hmm. on down to Estes Springs yes. that way. But now it's a four-lane highway, so
okay.
it is not that different because it's about 20 miles to Shelbyville and then another 20 miles to Lynchburg from Shelbyville. So it's not bad at all.
Yeah. What about, what were your favorite songs, musical acts, radio shows as a kid? Teenager.
Oh, as a teenager, the radio show we listened to the most was WLAC, which is, it was out of Gallatin, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, he used to play, and I think he had a record shop down in Nashville
mm-hmm.
where he sold the records, but it was like, and you could have that station to go to Detroit with you, because you'd be traveling at night.
Nice.
That station would take you all the way to Florida without interruption. So I don't know what kind of travel they had for, but you can pick that station up. A lot of folks.
China.
Yes. And nowadays you can't hardly get out of the area, Middle Tennessee area, mm-hmm. any station. But I want to say, I'm trying to think of his name. Oh, my goodness. They just honored him some years back after 50-some years in the business. I'm trying to think, did they put him in the Hall of Fame in Nashville? If you hadn't asked me, I could think of the name. I know it was WLAC was the station.
Okay. We can come back to it too.
Okay. If you want. It may come back to me later.
What about did you enjoy like reading as a kid or a teenager, and if so, like any particular books or authors come to mind?
Yes, we did a lot of reading. When we were younger, we used to do Uncle Tom's Cabinet because they were getting you to understand about integration
mm-hmm.
and whether segregation and slavery and all that, how it related. Huckleberry Finn, you know, just to get you in the mind mm-hmm. of just doing a little reading. And then they had you do a lot of portrait like from Langston Hughes.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have, because Martin Luther King, a lot of that came when I was coming out of high school. And I remember when I was a freshman, they had us to look at some of the things that President John Kennedy had done, his life story,
mm-hmm.
because he had an opportunity to come to Vanderbilt in 1961.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave us an opportunity as students and us to go. And that's the first president that I got to see up close.
Oh, that's cool.
Yes, and because we had to do a lot of his study.
Uh-huh.
Because it seems like by the time we got to be seniors, that fall is when he was assassinated. Mm-hmm. And it seems like we had to start writing poems. We had to write something about his life.
Mm-hmm.
Had to write about, compared him with Abraham Lincoln, because it was like 100 years apart.
Right.
The assassination occurred. And then it also had us looking at, and that's what the English teacher wanted us to do, is look at how we do our writing, how you make sure you match up your verb and subject
mm-hmm.
matter when, even when you're reading your material or your books, different books.
Yeah.
Look at the structure and see if that's something that really is a good material for young people. But I think mostly it's looking at poems and
mm-hmm.
looking at poems structure to help with literature mostly.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw it.
I see people.
What about television or movies? Anything you remember watching?
Oh, my goodness. I know you wouldn't go there. You know, back in my day, we didn't have TV until I became... Oh, nobody had probably had TV until later years. I might have been... You can imagine. You cannot imagine nobody having TV back then, but they didn't.
Right, okay.
You had to have a little money to have TV.
Yeah.
My grandmother, my mother's mother,
uh-huh.
gave us our first TV. And that was really a treat
mm-hmm.
because it was something different. Because we always listened to the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And so the story that we was listening to on the radio, The Edge of Night,
mm-hmm.
Monticello,
mm-hmm.
those were the two favorite shows. Because I guess the storyline attracted you. You want to know what was going to happen to the people next, the suspense of it. It was almost like Dallas.
Yeah, okay.
And Dallas is coming back. It seemed... So, well, I thought those people died. But anyway.
Yeah.
It's, but,
it's like a soap or something.
Yeah. And those were the early years before I went to high school was when I remember we got our first TV. And since it was a large family, us,
mm-hmm.
we would turn that TV and lift up the window and get your blankets and go out and lay on the ground. And that's how you looked at your movies at night.
Hmm.
You looked at the movie on TV through the window.
Weird. How come?
It was cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was cooler outside. And then
because it's
back,
hot. Okay.
Yeah, back then, that was the cool way to go. And see, I told you we didn't have fans.
Right, right, right. Yeah, yeah.
We didn't have air conditioners.
Uh-huh.
We just raised the windows. And... we didn't worry about blocking doors. And so those were the early years of TV that I can remember growing up. Because I'm thinking Edge of Night, Monticello, Dallas, Peyton Place was big.
Peyton Place?
Yes. That was a drama.
Okay.
Yes, Peyton Place. Seemed like everybody knew everybody's business. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, that sounds like the city we in now. Everybody know everybody, you know. Because the city was smaller. It wasn't that many people. And everybody went to high school. The families knew each other.
Yeah.
So it was basically, that's what we always call Peyton Place in later years. We said, oh, we just like a little Peyton Place. But those was the popular movies back then was Dallas and Peyton Place. The daytime shows was most like Edge of Night. You catch that as soon as you get in from school at 3:30. Mm-hmm. That usually came on about that time. Monticello was come in afterwards because it was almost like a drama too.
Mm-hmm. What about what were your favorite foods to eat back as a kid or teen?
All of it. Let me see. Oh, I enjoyed turnip greens with cha-cha, neck bones, yams. Of course, fried chicken, all kinds of cornbread. Because my mom would make the hot water, either the baked bread, which was the cornbread with the milk.
Right. A lot of cornbread.
Mm-hmm. Those were the favorites.
Was there one particular meal that was like the biggest meal of the day, typically? Yeah. Which one was it?
The evening meal, either the Sunday meal, where everyone came to dinner at the same time.
Okay.
You did not come and take a plate and go to a room or anything. My father wanted to make sure that everybody was filled up before they left the table.
Uh-huh.
My father sat at the head of the table. My brothers was on one side to make three. My mom, my sisters, and then the three younger kids was at the end opposite.
Uh-huh.
We sit on the bench. It was bench. Oh, at the end.
Yeah,
we sat on the bench.
So I know you talked about traveling when you were like little, but did you travel much as like a teenager at all?
We used to travel from our grandparents' house.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because the grandparents lived about an hour away going north towards Lebanon, which was the Bellwood community.
Okay.
And then we always traveled south with my mother to her people.
Wow. What about as an adult, have you done?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Many.
Where have you, what are some places you've gone? Or?
Oh, my goodness. Where do I start? Where do I start?
Or, for what reasons primarily have you traveled?
Okay.
Pleasure, business?
All above. For mostly, I have joined what we call, if you know, the female group to the Shriners, called the Daughters of Isis.
You said the Shriners?
Uh-huh. Okay. So we always travel to the Shriners Convention.
Mm-hmm.
I joined the Shriners Auxiliary, which is the Daughters of Isis, back in 1986. And what I do is wherever the convention is held, we went to Detroit, New Orleans, more than once. We headed to New Orleans this August, Kansas City, the barbecue place. Get that natural barbecue, the baseball Hall of Fame for African Americans, the Buffalo Cowboys. I traveled to North Carolina, Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
We usually stay a week to Tampa, Florida. With the 33rd degree masonry, which is the female group to them of the Order of the Golden Circle, to Jacksonville, to Washington, D.C., which we have pictures. I will show you pictures later. To Memphis. I think we're on the way to Arkansas with the NAACP. Oh, to Atlanta, Georgia. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I left that out. More than once, also with the Shriners. With the NAACP, I started traveling with them when I became a member in 1970.
Okay.
We traveled to Minneapolis, Minnesota, Portland, Oregon. We drive these places.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
That's far.
Yes. Over 2,000 miles.
Yeah.
Yes. You just have to make sure you have drivers because sometimes I get worn out.
Yeah.
Miami Beach. And we always took young people because I was the state advisor for the Youth Council, Youth and College Division. Mm-hmm. We usually to New Orleans, which was 1974, I believe. That was the, in my opinion, that was the best. The young man that was the president here is now retired physician in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And he won Mr. Tennessee.
Oh.
Is represented against all the other youth councils in Tennessee. We had a chance to take pictures with the national president, which was a white man, and his background. All of his children and grandchildren became life members at birth at $500 per person. And in 1974, he had already had 55 members of his family become life members of the NAACP because that year he had a granddaughter that was born. The next year, when we traveled to Washington, D.C. in 75, we opened up the program book for the Youth and College Division. There was our youth that was sitting with the national president. They put that picture in, and I was hoping when I got that 100-year book back in 2010, I was hoping that I, well, 2009, I was hoping when I opened that book that in that year, 1974, I would see that picture that was in there, but it wasn't. They had the national, the executive director's picture for that year, because we got the 100 pages, I mean 100-year book of the NAACP. I'm the first in Rutherford County female to get the Golden Heritage, which is the highest award to become a member, life member. I have went through three stages of the life membership.
Wow.
Yeah, so I have my plaque, I have it there, that I was going to present that plaque to the museum. I just got it laying down so it wouldn't fall. I traveled to with just different organizations.
Yeah.
NAACP, the Daughters of ISIS, the Golden Circle, also with the Eastern Stars. We travel with the Grand Matron to Atlanta to be with the Grand Masters and the Grand Matrons and Grand Patrons of the Order of the Eastern Stars, which also, the Southern Jurisdiction, which also are part of the Bahamas. And just for fun, with the AME Church and also with just with the family.
Yeah.
We have taken cruises to Jamaica.
Nice.
We went to Mexico. We also have went to the Cayman Islands, which was nice.
Jealous.
Yes, very nice. Jamaica was nice. and also with friends and with some of the ministers that graduated from the American Business College that was mm-hmm. getting married, and they're from the Bahamas. What the Bahamas did is have Tennessee Day in August in the Bahamas. We traveled in, I want to say November of 1971 mm-hmm. to the Bahamas mm. for a wedding.
Oh, nice.
And I still have some pictures of the breakfast That's wedding. And they had the reception at, the reception was at the country club. Mm-hmm. That was the first place that I had an opportunity to ride in a car that the steering wheel was on the opposite side. Mm. But yet, they had American cars driving on the wrong side of the road. Uh-huh. And they couldn't see around the curb, but they would pass cars on the curb. That was scary. And they drove fast. Mm-hmm. And but it was really... you didn't want to come back to the States because it was something in the atmosphere that you felt it was metal. And you was on the beach and you just seemed like you were floating the whole time. Mm-hmm. It was just a different atmosphere when you get to, I guess, it's close to the equator or yeah. something.
Warm.
That mm. you want to stay at least a month and not a few days. You really want a longer time. So the Bahamas was very nice. So
yeah.
I want to go back.
Yeah.
I want to go back. Between there and Hawaii would be my next two trips.
Sweet.
I left Las Vegas out. Lord, so many trips to Las Vegas. All driving right. as well as flying. The drive was a two-day drive, mm-hmm. but we drove straight through.
Oh,
yeah, wintertime.
You gamble?
On ice. Oh, of course, yes. Go to L.A., to Venice Beach. Uh-huh. It was kind of cool, but too cold for me. Had to wear a sweater. Uh-huh. But that's the first time being in California in uh-huh. summertime and being cold.
Yeah.
But, yes, not to mention just... Came back from Atlantic City last month, mm-hmm. New Jersey. So the hotel was a whole casino.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, for you to entertain yourself.
Uh-huh.
But we went for some other activities for the honor, the Imperial Commandress for the Daughters of ISIS. Mm. We had attended a testimony for about okay. 5 days.
Cool. Going back to college, so you went to MTSU. Was that?
It was second. My first college was TSU.
Okay, so you, okay.
And then I transferred.
When did you transfer?
I transferred in 1965, a year after I had went to TSU, because my parents, at that time, we was trying to see if we could save some money by me living off campus.
Mm-hmm.
But the dean of students really didn't want her freshmen and sophomores living off campus because it seemed like we got in more trouble, she would say. Not mm-hmm. being supervised, but yeah. she felt we needed to be chaperoned yeah. a little closer because different things were happening in the city and we would have to walk to campus rather than riding because... Mm-hmm. And when I went to college, freshmen wasn't allowed to have cars on campus.
Okay.
At that time, young ladies wasn't allowed to wear pants.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Not shirts outside your dorm. You had to wear that inside your dorm, either at your home.
Uh-huh.
But you did not walk across campus unless you had a skirt or dress on.
Long yes. skirt, I bet, too. Yes.
Big change. Big change. But... since that was quarter when I got ready to transfer, we had to sit out a semester and we could not come until we had a semester in between the quarters. Mm-hmm. And so in 66, I came but only stayed a few months. And then I really dropped out because you really had to consider have your own money because my father had helped me. Mm-hmm. Where I was there, and so when I dropped out to work, and so something told me I really need to finish my degree. So where I was working, I had a supervisor that was the executive director. So my supervisor, they allowed me to attend classes if I would change my major from mathematics to social work, because the program I was working with covered about 26 social agencies in the county. And so I agreed, but they didn't have a social work department. They had a department with sociology, with emphasis in social welfare.
Okay.
So a year after I changed my major to social work, to sociology, they said that they would create a social work department. And they gave me an opportunity as a student, and plus I was a supervisor at my agency, that if I would supervise seniors in the field of social work, they would give me credit towards my degree.
Oh, cool.
And they needed something unique that they could present for accreditation.
Mm-hmm.
So I was considered one of the first student supervisors to work with the School of Social Work to get their accreditation. So in 1978, we finished the accreditation presentation, and the University of Florida and the University of New York sent representatives, and they looked at our program because we had a professor that did social policies. And then we had the other two advisors that did the main core of the requirements for the accreditation.
Mm-hmm.
So I got an opportunity to have 12-hour credit for one course.
That's awesome.
Yes, because we had to leave teaching. What we did our senior year, we created a class that was required for students that before you graduate, you had to go into integrated social work.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically you needed to be in the field, in a job that it was going to be related to what you want to do once you graduate.
Mm-hmm.
That they would team up with someone that would train you, mentor you in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And so we call it integrated social work, that you would come back, you would take over a class for a day, you would present your report of whatever topic that you choose that you want to present through film, then it had to be something that could be discussed in class openly. And so you had to go over and do it. You would never know who the person you had to interview, because they would choose the student for you to interview to do the film presentation of whatever topic you chose.
Mm-hmm.
So my topic was single-parent open adoption. So they had to figure out, what did I leave out that they could ask me questions about?
Uh-huh.
What happens to a child that's been adopted by a single parent? What effect that would have on someone that wanted to become married later?
Mm.
How would that spouse, the fiancé, consider, were they adopt the child too?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
yeah.
I had a lot of questions that was asked me. So
yeah.
My class period just ran over that hour. So I knew I hit my A.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that was, it was really a good learning experience.
That's great. So what did you do after, when you graduated then? So tell me your career history now, if you want.
Yes. Oh, wow, my career. Oh, I started working as a substitute teacher when I left, graduated from high school. If you put in 1 year at the university, you could come back and sign up and be a substitute teacher. Mm-hmm. So I just put my name on the list because I was in transition to come back and transfer to MTSU, but I couldn't go to school until the next year. So I substituted in the county school system and at Holloway High School.
Oh, that's fun.
Yes, I went back to my high school and I did the substitute only for the math teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a chance to see some of the students that have been to service in the military, fought in the different wars. They were coming back to school. So I had some of those students in algebra.
Huh.
that I worked with. And then I had an opportunity after working with what we call the Youth Corps, which was part of Mid-Cumberland Human Resource. It was giving youth an opportunity to work different agencies that they had planned mm-hmm. and learning some skills. I also had a chance to work downtown on the square. They had a restaurant, and they needed someone to come down to work with the cook. And so I helped the cook to get out the food, but of course I didn't prepare no food mm-hmm. because I told the cook, this is not my passion. Mm-hmm. I was planning on getting my degree because I was not planning on being in nobody's mm-hmm. kitchen if I could help it. Yeah. And so she would laugh at me. She said, I will agree because you cannot cook.
Yeah.
I didn't pick up my mother's skills. Yeah. I said, that was for all my other sisters. So after finishing there, I started working with Mid-Cumberland Community Action Agency. They were just open for what they call the Neighborhood Service Center. Mm-hmm. And we started like in July. We were interviewed in June. We're starting the job in July. I didn't know if I was going to be hired or not, but we were in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
We were the one that looked at all the social problems that was in the neighborhood and what we could do to help people change their lives. This is including housing, if mm-hmm. they needed housing. What other program was coming in? They also looked at Start and Head Start. That mm-hmm. was the five-year-old group for preschool.
Yeah.
Because they did have some kindergartens, but wasn't enough. In fact, we opened this building to bring those kids in mm-hmm. here.
Okay.
Because we had closed it after we got through. They stopped using it for the middle school. And what they did is had us to go through the neighborhoods, sign those as many children up. So I think I had the largest number that I had assigned up, 300. But mm-hmm. of course, by the time they opened it up, probably some of them was ready to go into school because at that time, if you, I think it was like November 1st, October the 31st,
mm-hmm.
if your birthday was before then, you could go ahead and enter the first grade.
Okay.
And some kids that we had signed up entered before the first grade, into the first grade. So I stayed with Mid-Cumberland for about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 78, in between that time, I decided that this is when I was going to get my degree
mm-hmm.
because I switched my major to social work mm-hmm. in 75. And I said, well, I was just going to take 3 years and finish up my college
right.
and get ready for the real world.
Yeah.
So in 76, I decided to go and work at night and work for what we call Tennessee Preparatory School.
Mm-hmm.
Those were children that was brought in at court order to move them anywhere in the state of Tennessee. They moved them back in. Gotta keep the noise down.
No, it's okay.
What we got opportunity to kiss even as young as the kindergarten
mm-hmm.
all the way to the senior year. So when they become seniors, they graduated from TPS, and then they can go back to the cities in which the judge removed them from.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also had opportunity that I would have my degree in social work.
Yes.
So I was already working for the state.
Yeah.
So what I did is ask for a transfer from being a security guard at night to become a social worker during the day.
Oh, nice.
Yes. And so 2 years exactly from when they hired me as a security guard, they finally, because I had been to some interviews at the same place, and they chose another young lady to be the social worker. So they called me within 3 months and says, I think we're going to have another position open. Do you still want to be considered? I said, oh, yes. And so I got a chance to transfer on the same day, 2 years later, to the Department of Mental Health, Mental Retardation, and worked in the Office of Community Service at Clover Bottom, which was the institution for for individuals, individuals with mental retardation.
Okay.
So I worked in the Office of Community Service, so my job there as a social worker was to look at services in the community, and since Clover Bottom, it says, cover 40 counties from the Tennessee River to the Plateau Mountain going up towards Crossville. Crossville was that cutoff point. And from the Kentucky line to the Alabama line, all the counties in between was 40. The state only has 95 counties. So Middle Tennessee has 40 of the 95 counties. And I think West Tennessee may have 21, and all the other counties are east. But our job was to look at services that could assist the family in their own county, in their own region, without bringing a person to the institution. Because they looked at, you had children, that parents had medical needs. A lot of the children was deformed. Parents did not feel comfortable in leaving them, but yet the parents were separating. Some was getting divorced because it was a strain on the family. It seemed like after the child was born, it seemed like things wouldn't really gelling. So what the state by 1992 started what they call Medicaid waiver. And they went from Medicaid for the state. It became TennCare. And then the federal government, what they did is provide dollars to help the state fund those programs. And that every child that was eligible, they were eligible because of their disability and not the family income. They were to the point of providing assistance. They may adapt a home for a child to be treated in the home, educated in the home if need be. If they need specialized equipment, they will give specialized equipment to that family through the waiver. They will purchase a lot of the things that a child would need. And basically, I was assigned to the children's side. There are other people assigned to the adult side. They also were mandated by law that every individual under the age of 22 must be attached to an educational program. A lot of families weren't aware that the educational program had to provide system. So I stayed with that program until 98. In 98, I had an opportunity to transfer to the Department of Health, which was downtown Nashville. They never had a social worker in that department.
That's funny.
And so it was all nurses. So it was new. And so they were mandated to look at somebody that had mental retardation as part of that background. So I had 20 years. I had 20 years. So I was shocked. It was so many that applied for that same position. And they chose me. And I said, oh, this must be what God really wanted me to be. And so after I was there a year, I believe it was a year, they gave that position back to another department. They wanted it. And so my director came in and said, well, you can transfer. I said, but I don't want to transfer from here. I like working with Children's Special Service because that was a lot of the same kids I was working with before I left, but I just didn't do the hands-on things anymore. Yeah. I did it training nurses that was in the different departments.
Right.
And I said, oh, but I want to stay. And she said, well, you may have to take a cut in pay. I said, okay, take a cut in pay. What do that mean? She said, well, I said, can I keep my same pay even though they... And she said, well, I talked to the state personnel and see what they say. So I had to sign a paper that I would not get an increase. Well, everybody else is getting an increase. Mm-hmm. So the other folks in other departments said, you are crazy to sign. I said, well, I really didn't want to go back. And I had been there a year and I was enjoying what I said, well, okay. This too shall pass. I always tell myself something else will come. And so I stayed there from 1998 to 2002 when the federal government told the Bureau of Ten Care, which was in the Department of Finance Administration, because all the dollars that came into any program in the state went through the Department of Finance Administration. So they put the Bureau of Ten Care under that department because they had to be control the dollars. So they asked if it was anybody that had mental retardation a part of their background experience. They needed them to apply because they didn't have a social worker in that area because they all was nurses. So here I do. I go and transfer again because it was ordered by the federal government to work with and my job was to receive investigation and complaints, mostly complaints of persons that their services had been terminated, the services had not been provided.
Right.
So my job was to read the law to that agency that's supposed to be presiding. And so my thing was, okay, when you develop that plan, what did you and the parents agree to that was best for their child?
Right.
And I said, if you put it to print, then you have to provide that according to what was within the guidelines of the federal government. And so basically, I would go back and research the guidelines, and I would take that exact statement, highlight it, and put it into a letter form and send it back to the administrator and say, this is a guideline, and this is what they already signed off in the program. So basically, you have to provide it to the family. They were very upset with me. So by 2007, they were trying to figure out a way to get rid of me. So God said I had something better. I had neck and spinal surgery.
Oh, snap.
April the 2nd of 2007. And I was required to be out 6 months.
Wow.
So a lot of the administrators across the state, because by then, in 2002, I was dealing with the whole state complaints. And they would come through my department, so I had to respond to them and send them back after I got my supervisor approved. But it was so many assistant superintendents of those different programs did not like me giving them back the federal mandate that says this is what the federal government said you have to provide. So I said, I was under so much stress, so I said, did not know I had a tumor that was growing, and it had been growing for, it was days I couldn't even get out of bed. And so by the time I finally had the MRIs done. I had to have more than one because they had to know exactly where it was located. And it just happened to be located between the shoulder blades. But yet was sitting so high. On April the 2nd, when I had the surgery, when they went in and opened my back up, because they had in my neck, my disc had fused together. Mm-hmm. So instead of having seven, mine were only showing six.
Mm.
And it should have been seven. But my head was not straight. It was always leaning to the side. But they went in and took that pressure off that disc. But when they came down to the tumor, it was a vine. And it was wrapping itself around the spinal cord. And those were some of the days I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't move my body. And they had to take the time. It took them 4 hours and a half to take that tumor out of my back.
Jeez.
And they said, my sisters, she used to tease me. It's not the one that stayed with me, but my other sister came to visit me. And she said when they came in, it looked like they thought it was two people in my bed. I was swollen that big.
And
I said, well, all I can remember, because I went in that morning like at 7 for surgery, and they prep you that you have your own suites, because they had just built the spinal center side of Baptist Hospital. Mm-hmm. So basically they built suites so your family could live in the same room with you. All they did is just move your bed in and out, and mm-hmm. that's where you did your recovery in the same. So it was strange. She said she walked in, and she thought it was just two people. She said, I was swollen.
Jeez.
So,
that's scary.
It's from the neck. And then, of course, I had a neck brace, but I had also had, like, a pad, because they had to have a place for all the infection to drain.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened was my temp kept going up. But that evening, it must have been dinner time, because that's the only thing I can remember. They woke me up and says, can you move your left arm? And I'm left-handed.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, is that food?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, yes. And so I took a bite of food. And they said, well, yeah, she can move her left arm. Because they had to move that left rib or
yeah.
something to get the tumor.
Yeah, yeah.
So I still feel it today.
Man.
Yeah, I still feel a lot of the pain. Sometimes comes back, and all I could figure, and they told me before, it's probably arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
Because they did a lot of treatment. And then I was going to go back at the 1st of November, because my... For 6 months was going to end the end of October.
Mm-hmm.
But around the 20th of October, I get this letter from the commissioner, and it says, we need your position. So you need to determine if you want your position.
Funny. Yeah, okay.
And I had not finished my 6 months. My physician my surgeon hadn't released me back to my physician. And say they ordered him to release me. And so he went on to release me. And so I was going to go back. And then I called the state retirement board. And so the woman said, you got full benefits. I said, oh, really? Send me the paperwork.
Uh-huh.
And I said, thank you, Lord. So I went and cleaned my office out of two weeks later. So I retired November 1
okay.
of 2007. So I've been retired and been working ever since I retired with no pay. So
yeah.
It's volunteer work that
okay.
I do for the museum. Also, the board of directors here, and I'm the chairman of the board at the daycare center, which is We Care Daycare.
Mm-hmm.
So I do those together, and I think next year my time will be up as the board chair for both.
Uh-huh.
So I get to do other things after
nice.
Then.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. That's
so.
So.
And then I didn't tell you where I was working as a security guard.
Mm-hmm.
I was working for the agency during the day,
mm-hmm.
security guard at night, And in between those, I worked for MTSU. So my time for MTSU ended. I started in 1973 mm-hmm. with them as being event supervisor for special events and ticket taker.
Oh, cool.
And then I retired from there in 2008 after 30-some years.
Wow. So that's the longest running one.
So it was 31 years with the state of Tennessee and 34 years with MTSU.
Huh. Okay, so let's see. Going back to your parents, so where are your parents from? Were your parents from here, or where are they from?
My mother was from Franklin County, which was Esther Springs, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And my father was from Wilson County, which is about 3 hours apart, and he was from Bellwood, Tennessee. His mother died when he was 13.
Okay.
And basically, his grandmother had to raise the rest of the kids.
Okay.
And I think he left, he worked with a white guy, and his family that owned horse stables there in Wilson County called Young Stables.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how he learned how to train show horses.
Okay.
So he got on with a family that had the horses here in Murfreesboro, but yet they traveled down, because it wasn't in the interstates, mm-hmm. and it was only two-lane highway, so
right.
Highway 41 went through Esther Springs.
Okay.
And they had a home, something like apartments, where that was be a break, which you relax before going on to mm-hmm. Florida. And that's where my mother worked there. And so my father said it took him 3 months to make a decision that this is the woman he wanted to marry.
Yeah.
And he said, she agreed. So they got married after 3 months of knowing each other.
Wow. That's awesome. I mean, it's awesome about it. Like,
mm-hmm.
Did they have any favorite sayings or proverbs?
No, not really. I can't remember any exactly.
What about, what was the most important lesson they taught you?
Oh, always treat others like you would like to be treated. And no matter what age, whether it's a child or adult,
mm-hmm.
just remember, put yourself there first and remember what you were like, and that's how you would treat others.
Hmm. What about your grandparents? Where are they from?
My mother parents were from Coffee County. My mother was raised by her grandmother, which mm-hmm. was from Esther Springs, Tennessee. And she was a midwife.
Okay.
My mother, we thought was our auntie for years.
Mm.
We always call her aunt.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't find out till later years, I guess I was in my teenage, that she was really my mother's mother, not her sister.
Funny.
Because my mother was the oldest of 10 children.
Uh-huh.
And the sister that was next to her, they were just a year apart. Their grandmother took them and raised them. And then my mother's aunt, oldest child,
uh-huh.
was a male. And her grandmother took her and took him and raised the three of them as sisters and brothers.
Okay.
And they were the firstborn of her daughters. But other children came afterwards. And then my mother's father, she found out later, they were not, her mother and her father was not married, but the father already had two children. And so they introduced, and I think my grandfather may have already been, had already passed when she found out that was her father. But her sister and brother was real close, that was older than mm-hmm. her, and they lived in Elyria, Ohio, and so we used to travel there to visit them a lot during the summer months, and also around special holidays, we travel there, as well as doing a lot of traveling. And his people was from Lynchburg, which we found out later.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like a little circle.
Yeah.
His father, which was been my mother's grandfather, him and his brothers helped Jack Daniel's daughter to run the Listeria after Jack Daniel died.
Funny.
It was the history that came back from some cousins. They wanted to make sure that she knew the extended family. And her father was the first telephone lineman for Franklin County, which was, let's see, she was born in 1917, so it would have to be early years. Because I think he was born in the 1800s. And then his mother and father lived in Franklin County. A lot of them had been listed as day laborers when we looked on the census report. And then, like my mother, grandmother, her father lived with her when before the her mother was born. So in the early 1800s, I think when we looked at the census in 1900s, her mother's, grandmother's father was 55 then, so he was born around 1845 when we looked at the census. But by the 1900, he was already a widow. But according to my great-grandmother, he had five girls and a son. And a lot of them we knew. So it was good to know that.
So did your family own property?
Yes, my mother inherited property. There in Franklin County, which was right next to the church. And then part of that, once she died, the property was given to the children. So that's where our property is.
And did anybody in your family ever share a crop?
Yes. My father's father was a tobacco. Yeah, farmer. And that was really strange to see how they planted the tobacco and then used the white cloth to cover them to keep the bugs out. So they always harvest tobacco each year. That was one of their biggest crops. In that area, I noticed in a lot of those areas, there was a lot of tobacco farmers. And he owned his own land. They didn't have inside water. They didn't have electricity. They used the little oil lamps. And then like the ice box. They used as the refrigerator. We always brought a big chunk of ice at the store when we was traveling to them. And my mom, since she was a caterer, she always packed a big lunch for us. And then they had a big stove. They always cut wood, got the coal from downtown. For the water, we always took big buckets. We always walked down to the spring, use a dipper to get the water. Good spring water. Everybody wanted to bottle it up and take it with you.
So while you were growing up, what were you told about slavery?
I don't guess I really wasn't told that much. As I guess we really didn't talk about slavery that much. I found out a lot of that later, like talking to grandparents sometimes. my great-grandmother, because we stayed with her during the summertime. She may have talked about it, but not really, because a lot of them was considered free slaves. They wouldn't, they didn't have to pay for their freedom.
Right.
In fact, the grandparents, like her father, was born around before they even had the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
So she just never discussed.
It wasn't talked about, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we've talked about... What do you remember about going shopping or going to stores growing up?
Oh,
and in
goodness.
Particular, the role of black-owned businesses.
Going shopping. We really, when we grew up, we really didn't come to town unless you came on the weekends, mm-hmm. on Saturdays. And you usually went to the grocery stores around the square. Mm-hmm. Meat Slide is what they call it. Some of them, business, some days, even just my father always purchased the food from the grocery stores there on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
If he wanted to get a sandwich or something, it was always the restaurant that was right off the square, but it was owned by a black business.
Mm-hmm.
Usually we didn't. I guess because my mother did a lot of the catering, but if they had to buy groceries, usually that's the spot that he, because he always brought the boys in, have a haircut,
mm-hmm.
and then we just get the groceries from them, and then come back home later that evening.
Right. What, how do you feel like, I guess, like, relationships between blacks and whites have changed through time, or have they?
Yes, they, in my opinion, it had changed a lot. It seemed like integration was approved earlier than when the school closed.
Mm-hmm.
We have a African-American student that integrated about 2 or 3 years before.
Mm-hmm.
They really forced the county to integrate the schools. I remember when the signs came down, color only here.
Uh-huh.
That was even in the public health department.
Wow.
They had the rooms, waiting rooms, color only of white. By 1968, I was already employed, and I had to transport people to the health department.
Uh-huh.
And if the color only section was filled up, I would go sit in the white because I had my badge on that I worked for a department.
Really? Like.
Yeah. And, you know, you can ask me to leave because I worked for an agency. And I had to bring kids in for the shots. And it seemed like with Dr. Sanders being there, some of the changes you could see slowly coming through where by 1970, I was part of a sit-in
march.
We created an organization called Black Community Action Committee, and that was young adults. Back in 70, we probably around 23, 22, 21, around that age, and we decided just create our own committee, have our own little sit-ins and boycotts. And so what we decided to do is take the holiday around Easter. We still got some young people. Well, we're not young, but we still have the people around today that was a part of that group. What we decided to do is look at everything that affected a family,
mm-hmm.
whether it was school, whether it was with the bankers, department stores, where you purchase your clothes, and what they allowed you to do. Because back then, for the department stores, they didn't allow blacks to be on cashiers. The banks didn't allow blacks to be tellers. A lot of the adults that had children couldn't find jobs. So what we decided to do is do a sit-in just to see. We wouldn't go in to sit. We just sit in front of their business with signs. And then they had the law enforcement to tell us we couldn't stand on the sidewalks with those signs. So we would stand where the cars pull into the parking lot and tell them they couldn't pull the cars all the way up to the sidewalk because we had to leave a space for us to walk because we wouldn't march in the street. So we decided to take the major holidays that people bought most of their clothes. And we found out when we went in to interview some of the owners of the department stores, and we just asked them, well, what is the day you sell most of your clothes and that you can move your inventory? But they had no clue what we was doing, and so he told us, he said, oh, the Easter is when most of the African-American community buy most of their clothes. They are our bigger customers. And we said, oh, okay. We said, okay, we're going to take the week of Easter. We're going to do the week before Easter because that's when they're going to come in with their money. So we just got the community to prepare. This is what we're going to do. We would like for you to support us. Go somewhere else and buy your Easter flock. Go out of town. Don't buy it in Murfreesboro. Because they just had the big city in Nashville in the 60s. So we decided to do it in 1970. We said, quiet down, but we said we wasn't moving. They wasn't hiring. And they definitely wasn't going to hire African Americans to work up front. And we said, well, what's the difference? You take our money. So what's wrong? So what we did do, we decided to do was two major shopping centers. Mercury Boulevard was where Roses was. Big, had a big store. And then Sullivan's was the other department store that had men and women. But they did hire an African-American, but he made sure most of the clothes was out of stock and out. Change of the season, you know, that was some of his job. So they had him to come and talk to us when we started marching down there. And I mean, we just said, you know, y'all better make sure you have some good walking shoes because you're going to walk the whole town. We got in no cars. We walked with those signs from one shopping center to the other. And we did that, they thought, for 1 week. And we said, no. We took a break like that Sunday and said, no, we're going to do it for another week. They're not going to discount their clothes and sell them. We're going to show them. They're going to have to give them away because we're going to march another week. We did it for 2 weeks. And then, let's see, that was in April. And so the next month we decided to have a whole week. Inviting people for discussion with the community. And we would set it up. We had a day for the bankers to come. We had a day for the Board of Education to bring the superintendents of schools to tell us how schools was going to really be better for all students and not just one race of people. And I remember Mr. Baxter Hobgood. Hobgood is named for him. He was very instrumental and said, this is what they want to do with the elementary schools. and he was doing with the city. And also, we had a date on Wednesday for the churches to come together and really support us. Mm-hmm. And then we had another day for the department stores. No representatives showed up for the department stores. We said, we gave you a time last month after we did our boycott. This was going to give you an opportunity to do what you say you can do for the community.
Mm-hmm.
But that effect did happen, that they started hiring African Americans to work as cashiers, to work at floor people, rather than just working in the stock room. So changes did come, but it came slowly. We had a meeting later with the president of the NAACP, mm-hmm. which was Mr. William Butler, and he informed us. Oh, we also met with the mayor, because the mayor at that time was, Mr. West, Mayor Westbrook. I think he was the mayor. But anyway, Mr. Butler came. Mr. Butler came and informed us that he was told that we must have been MTSU students, because students in Murfreesboro did whatever, African American in Murfreesboro did whatever the white man told him.
Wow. That's crazy. So, what have been some of your greatest joys in life?
My greatest joys, I guess, is serving others,
mm-hmm.
is working with people that I had an opportunity to know the laws,
mm-hmm.
Assisting them in navigating through red tape and receiving services. I guess really attending the first time for a class was only during my college years,
mm-hmm.
Attending school that was integrated for the mm-hmm. first time when I transferred to MTSU. And when I transferred, you may have only one African American student to a class, or some classes you had no African American students. Yeah. So it wasn't not that many people on campus back mm-hmm. then. But it's opportunity of seeing the world, opportunity of traveling, meeting other people, networking, even today with the technology, you can keep up with the movement of people and what they're doing. So it's just a connection of knowing that you have people out there that is lifelong friends.
Hmm. What about challenges? What have been some of your greatest challenges, and how did you get over them?
Wow. I guess at my youngest years that I can remember, one of the challenges is when I started working. My first job was at the country club, helping with the cook, and sometimes had to be a short order cook, not being paid.
Mm.
But you work all week and you expect for you to have a paycheck like everybody else for receiving one. And for the manager or the supervisor says, well, we didn't make enough money to pay you. And you go home and tell your siblings that's supposed to be there to protect you when your parents are not. And she said, oh, it don't work that way. We are going back right now because she's going to have to pay you out of the cashier drawer.
Yeah.
And so that was eye-opening when she saw the family come back, because there was days that every member of my family, if they was not the cook, they were the waiter or waitress. We're the one that cleaned up the club after mm-hmm. the day is done. We also was the the family that washed the dishes and had them back on the shelves. But when certain things happen, if the whole family walk out, mm-hmm. they have no workers.
Yeah.
They have nobody to serve. All the people that came to the club that day to eat dinner or anything. So it wasn't like we had a lot of restaurants in town.
Yeah.
As well, we did not have a lot of hotels back then. Mm-hmm. So you had to learn how to navigate through how other people would mistreat you yeah. as a person because of the color of your skin. And sometimes you dealt with it the same way when I worked on my last job in 2007. I had to file a discrimination against my medical director.
What happened?
They found him in violation of having me to work two different jobs, but only been paid for one. And because he wanted me to give up and quit, and he didn't realize I was not the type of person that quit a job mm-hmm. because someone felt that they didn't want me there. Mm-hmm. And so I first filed with the federal government for something to be on record that has been discriminated mm-hmm. because of my race as well as my age. So I put both of them in there because mm-hmm. I was over the age of 40 when it occurred. And they wanted to settle with me, and I did not accept that payment because that payment was considered amount for 1 month, and I had been doing it for over a year.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah. But in
a payment. So I told them they could keep the money. But I wanted on record
yeah.
that this had occurred. Just yeah. for them to put notice, put him on notice. They made him transfer out of that department. Well, out of that division. Mm-hmm. He transferred to another department.
Yeah. How do you think black is defined now compared to when it was defined when you were growing up?
Oh, it's a big change. Because when I was very young, it was colored mm-hmm. to Negro, to black, and now African American. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just the term. It has nothing to do with the person.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the way people perceived it to be. And we just say we have come a long way, but we still have a long way to go because you still have people that have a lot of hatred for other people just because of your color of your skin. Mm. And my parents have always taught us look at the character of a person and not the color of the skin, because some of your best friends are people of other races.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to the university for the first time of integration with MTSU back in the 60s, I had an opportunity to meet people of other races. And that was one of my greatest joys. By the 70s, I was to the point of being an American student that traveled with the foreigners.
Mm-hmm.
So I always befriended the foreign student advisor
mm-hmm.
and said, well, since I work in the city of Murfreesboro, I can assist you with all the resources that come through
mm-hmm.
that you would need for your foreign students.
Yeah.
And that's including housing.
Yeah.
So I had an opportunity to travel with some of the foreign students to different activities outside the state.
Huh. So I mean, this is the last question that I have right now. So what specific message would you want to communicate to the younger people of the community, future generations?
My message would be, you have the greatest opportunity as young people now, because race should not be what your life is geared around. It should be how you're going to serve the community. No matter how you are connected, it seems like you should give back something to the community that you want to serve, no matter what your gifts are in life. Mm-hmm. It took the whole area, community, for you to grow as a person. We hope that you become a productive citizen, that you're going to help the community to develop further, that changes can occur that are positive, mm-hmm. that it would benefit all races of people, because now we got people of color from every nation that's living here in Rutherford County because of the university. Mm-hmm. And opportunities are open, but you as a person, you cannot close yourself down to only being in your little group. You have to get outside that group. And what we always say, get outside the box. Network with people, because you got a great opportunity through technology. Travel. Don't stay within your confinement of your city or your state. Have an opportunity to meet people from other places. Mm-hmm. It may not cost you that money if you pool your resources together. Mm-hmm. But take the opportunity to move outside your safety net. But be careful about the people that's not going to help motivate you. Be careful about the people not changing your goals in life. Mm-hmm. You know, stay focused. You know, you got an opportunity now to really grow as a person. And you're in what we call a generation now that could be well above where we were, you know, even 30 years ago. Yeah. Even the city of Murfreesboro have changed. Mm-hmm. And we have said it's so many people that's living in the city that they've been here less than 10 years.
Yeah.
Majority of the people living here. In fact, 3/4 of the people living here has not been here probably more than 10 years. Mm-hmm. So just take advantage of life. Enjoy it. Look at wholesome activities and not experience all the negative, even if someone asks you to try it. If you've been taught differently, just remember what you have been taught. And we always said, you know, look to your spiritual side. Mm-hmm. And let that be your lead, because your instincts will tell you what's good and what's not. And pay attention to it.
So is there any other information you want to include that we have not talked about yet?
Oh, we have talked about so much.
I think we did pretty good, yeah. I mean, obviously there's always more, but...
Yeah, I just say, I put a lot of working with other people, and when my son was growing up, he said, why do you speak to everybody mm-hmm. that you're driving down the road? I said, I've been taught that as a child, that you always smile because it doesn't cost you a dime, mm-hmm. and you never know how that smile will come back. And I used to hear it later, if I had seen somebody on the road and yeah. they remembered me from later, that's the first thing they tell you when they approach you, is that I remember you waving and smiling. So you make an impression, and it's a lasting impression
yeah.
that maybe, like we always tell people, you may want to run for office, but people will remember you yeah. according to your character.
That's and very true.
If that character can fit within that person's life, uh-huh. they'll vote for you.
Huh. I like that. That's a really good lesson. Okay, well then, I guess thank you again for participating. And please feel free to contact us if you have any questions or wish to add your contribution.
I will. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been enjoyable.
I'm fine.